Okay,
Oh,
that's beautiful.
yeah.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Lisa Patel, a pediatrician at Stanford, is worried about the growing danger of air pollution.
I'm really concerned that a child born today is likely to breathe poorer air quality than what we enjoyed.
As the climate warms, extreme wildfires are blanketing many cities and towns in thick smoke. That smoke can contain tiny particles called PM2.5, which have been linked to health problems like asthma. Young children, whose lungs are still developing, are especially vulnerable to this pollution, and they can even be exposed indoors. For example, Patel remembers walking into the neonatal intensive care unit during a wildfire in 2020.
And there was so much smoke outside that our filtration systems couldn't keep up, and you could actually smell it inside of our NICU.
Patel also worries about the Trump administration's efforts to repeal some air pollution regulations. Power plants, vehicles, and factories also emit PM2.5. But the Trump administration recently took steps to loosen stricter standards on this pollution that were set by the Biden administration. To help protect children's health, Patel encourages people to speak up for cleaner air and climate action. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Just one more thing before your interview. Can I have your address, please?
I live on Main Street.
I need your exact address.
I live on Main Street.
Oh.
No job, no home. And no home, no job. Don't let homelessness assumptions get in the way of homelessness solutions. Go to CanadaCanDoIt.ca. Help the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness.
Are there any, like, non-dance, I guess one could say, like, a non-artistic way? I mean, that could be open for interpretation. We know this. Are there other ways that you practice in your everyday to sort of maintain that, like, body, mind, and spirit connectivity? Is there, like, other things that you do in your day to kind of maintain that?
I spend a lot of time outside, or I try to, you know. Sometimes I gotta be stuck up here with my books and research papers and stuff.
Yeah.
Which I also like, well, I like that kind of,
you find what you like within them.
I'm working with what I've got up there.
Yes.
But I do, yeah, I love to be outside and going on hikes and things, walking.
Hell yeah. That's really it. That's really all you got to do sometimes. And I've been trying to get a lot better with that also. I think just recently I've kind of, like, my brain's like, oh yeah, you live in British Columbia.
Yeah, it's
you're not
really
in Toronto.
Nice out there, like.
Go outside, diva. And, like, I remember I was so gagged, like, last summer specifically. Like, I was going on so many walks just, like, finding things. And I was like, I'm a 15-minute walk from Burnaby Lake. Walk? Walk?
Just walk.
And, like, no. Yeah, walking along the highway. But it's, like, the highway is covered in beautiful trees.
Like, and literally, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I find so many trails. And it's just, I'm getting a lot better at it. I've been really bad. I the first time in, like, a few weeks, I smudged yesterday morning, and I was like, oh my God, I need to step my game up. What's going on? But then again, obviously, like, having that sort of mindset, like, you have to be perfect every time. I mean, that's colonialist in itself. But yeah, it is a journey, and it's a good thing of where we live, how we can still utilize it. While we can. For this first music break, we're gonna do Blood Song by Lady Midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote this question was quite, it feels a bit direct, but I feel like there's no other really way to approach this question. And I guess, like, I have my own weird apprehension with questioning this sort of thing, that I know has, like, varied levels of validity within them. How do you feel about the current state of Indigenous student representation at SFU's Contemporary Art School?
How do I feel? I don't know. But what I do know is that every time I'm making a choreography, I send out a little message to all the dancers. I'm like, first priority to be in my piece goes to Indigenous students. I really want to get to know you and work with all of you. And then I get zero response. Which, all in all, tells me that I am the only Indigenous student currently enrolled in the dance programs, which is an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, like in the case of the SCA, I feel it's such a small building.
Yeah.
Where, but also inhabits like a ton of different students of different disciplines. And so, like, it makes sense for just the nature of a university building to where we don't really see that many people that aren't in our own cohorts, in our own classes, in our own circles. But then, like, I'm on year four and you're number two, my love. So I don't really, like, it's really, well, actually, anyone I can actually think about, they probably are graduated by now. What I do remember from my first year, actually, my involvement in like the Femnisa is like quite like pathetic, I feel like, on my end. I'm not very active in that community, and I feel like just being on the Vancouver campus, like, that totally like is definitely a significant part of it. Nicole Manson, she was the coordinator for the Vancouver campus. And I remember when I was in my first year, I had a few meetings with her, and she was telling me how she was trying to get like Indigenous student space at the SCA, or at least on the Vancouver like buildings, and how it then was starting that they were just, I think it was the fishbowl on the fourth floor or maybe the second floor, I can't remember specifically. I think they were just kind of, it didn't go very far. It was never made. The closest they ever got to actually having it be put in place was that they just booked that room for like those few months and like told people when they can freely walk in, like go in and use it, and how there's probably some printed piece of paper on the door or something like that, saying what it was. But yeah, that was, I think, 3 years ago now. And I mean, I don't think they've ever really circled back on it. And
yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. It's interesting because I do think, I mean, I get it. If it just is that there aren't that many of us there, but it really makes you think. I think I also came from talking about my own experience with this, I guess, thought and feeling over it. I came from Toronto, and I guess, and this was also like perpetuated by like friends and people in my life and like mentors. I thought that BC was going to be like the Indigenous capital. Like, I thought there was going to be Native people walking up and down the street. I thought there was going to be like all my, like, I thought there was going to be, I thought, wouldn't you like to know what I thought, my lovely, lovely, lovely broadcast listeners? Well, in all fairness, this episode, as I stated, is going to be a two-parter. So, for comedic effect and for the best structural through line for these next episode, I cut off here. But yeah, these are kind of just like the seedlings of kind of what our discussion then kind of delves more into within like the realms of academia, being an Indigenous student, you know, having soirees with colonial practices as an Indigenous person in modern day, and what that does to our psyche and many other parts of our lives. But I thought that maybe a nice little treat for everyone, to kind of keep with this kind of theme of like urban indigeneity, our own struggles, but also in the realm of school and the kind of things that we do here at SFU, at the Contemporary Art School. I thought that we could finish this off for the last music break to be one of my own projects. I mean, of course, like all the soundscape stuff that I show at the end of episodes are my stuff. Technically, I'm using other people's writing, but this is my own song. And I wrote this one specifically through my positionality as an urban Indigenous person, specifically a mixed white passing urban Indigenous person living in Toronto. And, you know, my experience with that and my experience with things such as like family connection, land connection, self connection, cultural connection, girl connectivity all around. I had performed it at the Spring 2025 Music and Sound Festival at the School for Contemporary Arts. I had a lot of help from multiple professors of mine on mixing and song structure and performance and all that. So I like to shout them out a little bit in this kind of way. Yeah, and shout myself out too. Here is When Copper Touches Snow by me, Caitlin Terrell. And I'll see y'all next week for a continuation of our talk with Kalia. And enjoy.
You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
To bring you where you are now. So CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Sharing music and voices from genres and cultures around the world, reflecting you and the rest of your community. You make CJSF diverse.
This is Bird Note. For most albatross species, raising a chick is a real challenge. Waved albatrosses produce such slow-growing, needy offspring that females lay only a single egg every 2 years, and both parents need to share the load until youngsters can hunt on their own. Albatrosses tend to pair for life, and it can take a while to find the right partner. So some species don't start breeding until they're 10 years old, with some individuals even waiting till they're 20. Reunited pairs go through an elaborate synchronized ritual of braying, wing spreading, and bill tapping to reaffirm their bonds before getting down to the business of breeding. In Hawaii, biologists were puzzled to find that some Laysan albatross pairs had not one, but two eggs. Then they found that some of the birds going so faithfully through the ritualized series of courtship displays were both female. Although the eggs were fertilized by males that had since died or were from other pairs, the females were bonded to each other. Many of these female couples remain together for years. They can't successfully raise both offspring, but their combined efforts are necessary to raise one chick. For Bird Note, I'm Wenfei Tong.
Hi, it's Nardwar, the human serviette saying, you're listening to CJSF Burnaby and do-do-loo-do CJSF. Yeah.
Thank you. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.